Hey, for blues fans, summer in Maine means it's time for the North Atlantic Blues Festival. It is my honor and pleasure to have the man who has been spearheading the North Atlantic Blues Festival since 1994, Mr. Paul Benjamin. Paul, welcome.
Hey, thank you for enjoying being here and let me come up and talk about some blues with you. I'm looking forward to it.
I have that right, 1994. Is that when you started outside, or were you in the parking lot before that?
No, the parking lot was 1990 to 93, so first North Atlantic was 1994.
Wow. And the North Atlantic Blues Festival, Harbor Park, right there in downtown Rockland, and I go there, and one of the things I was concerned about the first couple of times I went there was finding a place to park that would be within a couple of miles. And some of these charitable organizations are there, and they have parking, and it is like two blocks away. So if folks are going to be going to North Atlantic Blues Festival, there's plenty of parking, and it's wonderful to donate to some of those folks and then just take a nice walk down to Harbor Park. You have lots of folks coming in, and how are sales going?
Advanced sales so far have been great. People just got to go to the North Atlanta Blues website, click on tickets, and all the information's right there.
You have a website, www.NorthAtlanticBluesFestival.com. I like that. some web addresses have all these letters and numbers in them, and I can't figure it out. Who do we have this year coming to your festival? And it's going to be July 12th and 13th, right in downtown Rockland.
Yeah, we try to mix up the lineup every year, bringing in some new people that people haven't seen that's up and coming. Then we try to bring in next level group of people, recognize their names, and then we try to bring in a couple of surprise acts that that might have been there before, and some are brand new. This year we're starting off with Harold Davenport, young Ryle as he goes. He just turned 18 years old, a phenomenal harmonica player, phenomenal guitar player, phenomenal writer. And he's going to have a band with him. He's going to probably open a show up on the stage by himself. And then he's going to bring the Matt Scola band out of Chicago that's going to back him on the stage. So they're keeping that young people out there and showcasing the young talent that's out there is important to the blues. Followed by him is the band, the Cashbox Kings, that you've played here often.
Yes.
A lot of fun, high-energy band. And then Chris O'Leary, another upping, he's been out there for a long time, but recently signed with Alligator Records and great harmonica player, a six-piece band. We'll keep that energy going. And, Anika Chambers and Paul Delirious, they just put on a phenomenal show. Anika's won many Blues Music Awards.
This is a radio show, but I do have my Paul Delirious T-shirt on.
Yeah, and then, we're going to finish up with, the amazing Kenny Neal.
Good.
On Saturday.
And, oh, man.
And the Street Preacher is going to play between acts on both Saturday and Sunday. She's a phenomenal vocalist. She has a full band, but she's going to bring just an acoustic guitar player with her. So they'll be playing on the side stage both days, and they'll actually be doing the Sunset Cruises on Morning in Maine that Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, weather permitting. That goes out after that.
Where do you get these? Harold Davenport. I haven't played him yet. I haven't gotten any music from him yet. And Street Preacher, same thing, but I looked at a couple of videos. Man, what a voice.
Yeah, they've Harold Davenport is, I've seen him a few times. He played for me down at the festival I do in Denmark. He was on stage up there in Denmark.
Wow.
And I got to see him, and he had sent me some stuff a couple years ago, I think when he was 16. And he just sent me some stuff, and I really enjoyed. He's down to earth, and he's one of those kids that plays it. Was playing in his house in his neighborhood, and his mom had to move because it was an apartment, and because he was playing at 3 o'clock in the morning, and they had to find a different place to play. But he's a sponge. Every time I talk to him, he'll sit down and talk, and he'll sit down and introduce himself to all the other players that's on the festival, and he just sits there and listens and takes everything in. Then he goes on the stage and you say, wow, this kid is 16 years old when I first saw him. And so he's just one of those. He's got a new record that's coming out. You know, when I get some stuff, I'll make sure I get it to you.
Awesome.
As well.
Thank
you. And the same thing with the, with the Gemini Dragon, another band that, that you probably don't have anything on. And
I actually got two singles from Gemini Dragon a couple of years ago, and I played the heck out of them. And then I like a lot of bands or artists that send me stuff, they disappear. And I thought, well, never see or hear from her again. And now two or three years later, I'm getting her music in, and then I see she's coming here, and I'm thinking, I get to meet her. Thank you, Paul.
Yeah. She's played for me at a couple of festivals that I do in Florida. That's where I first saw her. She had sent me some stuff, so I said, let's, they were going to be down in Florida for one of the, I was either camping with the Blues or the Blues Bash, either March or October, which wasn't sure they were down there. And so I put them on the bill, and I would say, wow. More people need to see this band.
Energy.
Energy is wild. And so, that's going to, she's going to open up on Sunday, Gemini Dragon. And then Matthias Lattin, I'm sure you've been getting some of his stuff. He's another one that's 22 years old. And he won the up-and-coming artist at the Blues Music Awards last year as a new artist. So then the Blackburn Brothers are amazingly high energy. They won the International Blues Challenge. They're out of Canada.
Yes.
And they are a phenomenal band. I've seen them a few times, and they just put on a very high-energy show. And then DeSoto Tiger, and you're going to recognize a lot of the names. It's, Jason Ritchie, Damon Fowler.
Yeah.
And Jonathan Boogie Long, and they got a brand new record coming out, and they're going to be filled with a band. So they're in the studio, I think, as we speak, with a new record coming out, which should be a lot of fun. And then that surprise act that we kind of like, that people are kind of surprised to hear they're coming here is Canned Heat is going to close on Sunday, and I'll give you a quick little story how that came about. Is that they called me. I did not reach out to them. The band called me and said, we've heard a lot of things about the North Atlantic Blues Festival. This is going to be our last year that we're touring as a group. It's on our bucket list. Is there any way we can come up and play for you at the North Atlantic Blues Festival?
Did you argue with them?
I said, let me look at some numbers, because I had to look. I already had most of my lineup in, and I said, let me crunch some numbers and see what we can do. And I called them back, and I gave them an offer, and they said, we're taking it. We want to play.
Wow.
And so, which was pretty cool. And then, so Canned Heat's going to close the show on Sunday, which should be pretty exciting for all those blues rockers that remember the Woodstock days and Canned Heat's.
Some of us are that old, Paul. Yes, you're looking right at me.
Yes, we are.
So when does this start, this process of getting the lineup for this festival? I know you get all kinds of other, but for this one, when do you start, really?
I'm already looking at 26.
Wow.
I'm not going to say, but there's already three bands booked for 26, and I won't say who they are because I don't have contracts, but there's three bands booked for 26. I try to give bands, in all the festivals I do, I book early. Because a lot of these bands, we're in the Northeast, and some of these, and it's like the things I do in Florida. I give them a chance to put a tour together. So if I give them an 8, 9, 10 month advance on this date, they use me as an anchor date or one of their dates, and it gives them a chance to put a tour together. And so a lot of bands are not having to fly in, and if they do, because we have to pick them up at the airport and transport them and bring them back and forth, and it takes a little bit of that pressure away from us, but it gives them a chance to put a tour together and play all of New England if they're coming to North Atlantic. And so other people get the chance to see some of these bands that will be on tour. So, the process is, like you say, I'm always looking at new stuff and new people. And I do catch a lot of bands at the International Blues Challenge when I'm there in Memphis in January, that bands that I've noticed at the Blues Challenge that might not have won it and not even made it to the finals, but I was impressed what they'd done and what they're doing. And you could feel the ones who are there to have fun, and you can see the ones who are there to be serious and hoping to make a career of it. And some of those bands have played at the North Atlanta Blues Festival over the years that I've spotted there. Matthias is one of them, off this list. And so it's you always look for that new talent, but you want to mix up. A lot of people say, who's headlining the North Atlanta Blues Festival? And my answer to that is whoever you bought a ticket to come and see is your headliner.
Absolutely.
Because someone has to open the show, someone has to close the show. And some of the bands now, in the past, the big headlining band said, we need to close. Now they're saying, we need to go on second to last or third to last because, we don't want to be on last because we probably aren't going to sell any product going on last because a lot of people stay there all day. And then they decide, after the end of the show, they want to get on the road. And if they have to wait in line to pick up a CD or a T-shirt, they lose the sale. So it's interesting. But there are some agencies say, if my artist is going to play for you, they have to be last. And it's easy to deal with.
Yeah. And I look at this lineup, and there's so many I know, and there's several I don't know. And like you mentioned, Gemini Dragon, she's coming here and I'm going to get to meet her because I don't travel around the country. You travel around the country. You travel across the ocean and you have a good time and bring so many great artists up here to Maine. Thank you so much over the years. It's been just fantastic. You did mention, though, that Gemini's opening Sunday, but somebody else comes on Sunday.
Yes, Matthias Latin, as we mentioned, the Blackburn Brothers, DeSoto Tiger, and Canned Heat. So we've gone through the Sunday lineup, and every one of them brings a different style of blues. And that's what a lot of people say, well, I'm not sure I'm a blues fan. If I can get them to the festival one time, then we got a hook for life.
The kids on Sunday, though.
Yes, we have the Sunday morning. That's what you're getting at, is the Mid-Coast Music Academy Blues Camp.
How did that start?
I'm on their board.
Oh.
I'm on their board of directors, but I got on their board after we started doing that. They had reached out to me when they first came to town and said, anything we can do with the Blues Festival? I said, if you guys want to put a camp together, I'll get you on stage. Mm. And so they do a blues camp, and I usually have at least one of the artists that's going to be playing on Saturday come in a day early and go sit down with the kids. And I go up and speak with the kids on Wednesday. Just before I get busy in the week setting up, I go in on Wednesday and sit down with the camp and explain to them how they're going to be treated, what's going to be expected, and tell them what's going to happen on that main stage. And I'm there for about an hour and a half, and the kids take it in. They have some really good questions. And then, like you say, I've had, Mick Colasso went in 2 years in a row. He actually came up and spent the week with them. We've had other people. Meg Williams has gone in and spoke with him. I forget over the years who's, but we've had someone every year. And this year, I'm hoping to have Harold Davenport go in and speak with him, as well as Street Preacher, who's going to be playing on the side stage, and go in and sit down with the kids and talk to them. Last year was kind of cool. Is the kids we had they were doing a Ruthie Foster songs.
Yeah.
So I had Ruthie Foster call in on Friday to the school. I called Ruthie and said, "Hey, Ruthie, I got the blues camp is the kids are going to be playing a tribute to you and a couple of your songs." And I said, "Any chance that you could just surprise them and call the school in?" And so she did. Ruthie's a sweetheart. But and that's the benefit of knowing some of these artists that I can call and talk. And so she called the kids. And spoke with the kids, and they videoed that show of hers and sent it to her, and she sent back to the school and thanked the kids, and it was an honor for her to help with the kids. And I see some of the kids now and then; they still talk about, "I can't believe Ruthie Foster called us." So we've partnered with them. They're one of our charity sponsors that we help out with the blues, the Mid-Coast Blues Camp, and now I am on the board of directors and. It's a great organization that I enjoy working with.
It's fun to see them and watching them set up. You can see some nerves, but once they've hit the first chord, they're almost like, "Man, we're going!" And they do. They are fun to watch.
They've only been doing it for a week.
Yeah,
and that's the cool part about it. To go in that first day and see them starting to perform and what they're going to play, and what they get out at the final. Thing on that stage on Saturday, I mean, excuse me, on Sunday morning, it's amazing the work that the teachers put in with them and these kids, and you know, and you know, some of these kids will be the first year they go to the camp a couple of years in a row. But I remember one young man, he was 13 or 14, was a piano player, and he was scared to play. So we turned the piano so he wouldn't be looking at the audience. The second year he came back, he turned the piano right so he could look at the audience. But, you know, it's good for them kids. You know, most of those kids will probably not grow up to be blues artists, but it gave them a chance to learn music and be on a big stage. And I think it's, you know, to them it's the thrill of a lifetime, and we're just glad to be part of it.
Fantastic. And touching on Ruthie Foster and Mick Colas, going to the blues festivals, yours, your two, those are the ones I go to, Gloucester and North Atlantic Blues Festival. The blues artists, to almost a person, just nice folks.
Yes.
They come out into the audience before the show. They walk around. After the show, they'll come out and talk. It's just some nice people.
Yeah, that's what makes this so much fun. You know, I mean, I've been doing this since 1978. And, you know, when the first guy I brought in a man was Eddie Shaw. And so, you know, but so over the years, you learn how these people are. We have that working relationship when I book them. You know, there's a professional part, the business part. Once the business part's taken down, you know, they're friends. Mm-hmm. You know, they're just down to earth. They just, you know, I put on the festivals for a living. They play music for a living. But it's a good fit. They're just so down to earth, though. They're accessible. Now, there are a few over the years. It just, you know, they just have that attitude and that. But 99% of the blues artists, you're going to be able to sit down and get a picture with them. They'll sign an autograph. They're going to talk to you. And they appreciate their fans. I think in the blues world, the blues artists appreciate their fans more than most other genres of music.
I'd say so. Yes, absolutely. I was in Gloucester when Hurricane Ruth was on stage, and she went down to the merch table, and I'd never met her, but I posted on Facebook how much I played her music, and she posts back, thank you, and all these blues artists thanking me, and I'm thinking, she's just sending me music, and I get to play it. Come on, thank you. And she was standing in line, two of the young ladies from Midnight Blue, or the club, were there, and they wanted their picture taken with Ruthie. So Ruthie's talking to him. She's a hoot. And she says, okay, who's going to take the picture? And they didn't even, she didn't know me. And the two turned around and they looked, oh, Captain Barney's here. He can take, that's Captain Barney. Ruthie runs around the table and comes and hugs me. And I'm almost crying. I'm so happy. Just a nice, nice lady. You mentioned Eddie Shaw, 1978. How did you meet? How did you know him?
Back then, it was 78, 79. There was a place in Rockland, Maine called the Golden Spike. Hmm. And it was a kind of a biker bar. The club that held about 300 people was in Rockland, and it was a rock and roll club. I was a bouncer there. And we were in the office on a Saturday morning, and the band that we had scheduled to play that Saturday night canceled. So we called an agency in Boston that we were dealing with, and we were talking to them, and they said, do you got anybody around? He says, well, we got this band here from Chicago that was supposed to play in the Boston area tonight, and their gig got canceled. They're just hanging around. If you want to take a chance and bring a band up in Rockland, and I convinced the bar owners, let's try it. It's better than no band at all. And so, you know, in comes Eddie Shaw and the Wolfgang in a way, you know, a very, very white bar, in a biker bar, and, you know, and there's some, black people coming in and this club, and, you know, and right off quick, that N-word came out, and I went over and I threw the guy out the door, and I went over and apologized to the band and said, sorry for that, you know, hopefully it won't happen again. And once they started playing, the whole place went absolutely nuts. They went over so well that they stayed and played again on Sunday. And so through Eddie, Eddie would give me, I talked to Eddie, and he got my I got my info from him, he got mine, we swapped phone numbers and that. And So every time he would come into the Boston area, he would give me a call and say, hey, because at that point, the Spike was only open for a couple of years, so it closed down. So Eddie would call me and say, hey, we're going to be playing in Boston at the TAM. So my wife and I would go up and drive to the TAM and drive back, you know, and get home at 4 or 5 in the morning. And my wife, as a dog groomer, then had to be up at 6:37, you know. But through him, he started calling me, say, hey, we got a couple extra days off. I would find a place to play. I mean, we booked a hotel, double hotel rooms, and put them in one room, and the band played another room. I would find different spots. And then I started going. That's when I started doing my at the Trade Winds when I had the Blues Plus Lounge, and started bringing Eddie there. So Eddie would introduce me to a whole bunch of other people from Chicago. So when they were doing that same tour, hitting the Boston area, they would call me and say, "Hey, Eddie Shaw told us to call you. We're going to be coming up." So I would start bringing in some of these bands, you know, Carrie Bell, Lefty Diz, Professor Eddie Lusk. You know, Jimmy Rogers, Pine Top Perkins, all these people come up and started playing for me, up in Rockland. And then Eddie invited me out to Chicago to go to the Chicago Blues Festival. And I had never been. And so I came home, after talking to Eddie, I came back to the house and I said, hey, Gene, I said, Eddie wants me to come out to Chicago to Blues Fest. You want to go? She goes, have fun. And so I went out there, and I had no idea where I was staying or nothing. I was just going. Mm. And so I went out there to Eddie and some friends of his, put me up at their house, and trying to get a hold of Eddie. And quick backstory in it: the only way you could get a hold of Eddie, because Eddie's phone was always disconnected or not, and that I used to call Lily Bennett, Holland Wolf's widow.
Wow.
So I would call Lily and say, I'm coming. Eddie's inviting me out to Chicago. He doesn't know I'm coming. I'm going to surprise him this year. And I said, where's he going to be at? She said, well, he's playing at this, Blues tonight. And so I said, fine, I'll just go. So I walked, I went into Blues, walked in, and the band's playing. And Shardy Gilbert spotted me first as bass player. And he actually stopped in the middle of the song and he said, Paul's here. So that's kind of how it started. And that night, I stayed with some friends and that they introduced me to, and I continued to go a number of years, and I got to meet so many different artists through Eddie. And then they started coming to Maine, and I would, so I started bringing in these artists to Maine. And then, in 1990, when the Trade Winds Blues Bash was the first festival started, I had Eddie Shaw and William Clark. Then I had four regional bands. And Eddie said, why don't you start a festival? And I had no idea. I mean, I was no idea at all. So I
wondered how you figured that. How do I start a festival?
Yeah, wow. So I decided to put a couple bands in the parking lot of the Trade Winds, and then put Eddie and William Clark in the club that night. So you could buy a festival ticket, see him there, but you could see him in a small club at night. So we did that for 4 years. And that's when I decided Eddie always came up and never had any records to sell. So I've learned how to be a record producer and produced a couple of records for Eddie, and then started doing the festival. And then 94 is when we changed it to North Atlantic Blues Festival. At that point, if you remember, Schooner Days used to be in Rockland. Mm. And they were there on that Friday. They come in on Friday and Saturday. And I took over. So the Chamber of Commerce said, any chance we can combine Schooner Days in the North Atlantic Blues Festival, or your festival you're doing in the Trade Winds parking lot? So I said, sure. And so I put out, Randy Labby, who had Deluge Records, I used to book some bands with him. I used to book like Eddie Kirkland and Pine Top and people like that that he was booking through him. And so I talked to him about it, and he said, well, I got a friend in Portland that's been wanting to do a festival. So he introduced me to Jamie, and we decided at that point, let's do a festival. And we come up with North Atlantic Blues Festival. So that was our first one in 94. And then after doing that a couple of years, we realized that all the schooners were leaving Saturday morning because they were week-long tours. So the park was actually open on Saturday. So we decided let's move the festival to Saturday and Sunday. Then we changed the festival to a 2-day event. And then a couple of years after that, we decided to shut the Main Street and do the club crawl for downtown. So it's been a fun roller coaster ride, seeing it work in Goro, and this year will be 32 years. So it's been a joyful ride, and I've got to meet so many great artists that I'm really good friends with, and that's the fun part that people don't get to see.
I've seen you at the club and at the festivals, and I was anxious to do this interview to ask and hear this story. I've heard some of your other interviews talking about it, but to start at Eddie there once, and now you're at this wonderful festival, and you got all the other festivals too, and you can switch out the bands and bring some back, and what a great story.
It's a story, and it's continuing, and I enjoy doing, and when it's now I consult, like I said, I probably made every mistake known to man putting on festivals, but I only made them once. And so I consult for festivals around the country. I can tell them, what works and what doesn't work. I can give them an idea of what they should be paying for bands and what, working with the agencies and that. There's so much work behind a festival putting it on that people don't have any idea. They don't realize that, that they show up on Saturday morning with their chair run, put their chairs in, and come back for the show on Saturday and Sunday. They don't realize that we were there at 4 a.m. on Friday morning, closing off the park and getting everything set up and bringing the stage in and, the back line and, and all that stuff. But
that was another question. What is Festival Week like? You mentioned you got stuff to do, but you go over and see the kids, and then you got to be there for the stage setup, the running of the chairs. When does the physical part start as opposed to getting the bands lined up?
The physical part starts at 4 a.m. on Friday morning. The city lets us have the park on Friday as a setup day, so we have to get on and block that off to make sure people are not going to be parking there going on a boat for 3 or 4 days. And every year we end up towing a couple of cars that they just didn't listen to the harbor master. And so we got to get that all blocked off, put barricades all over the park, so get them out. And then we got all the vendors coming in on Friday, so I book all the vendors as well, and so we get the vendors in their spots, and then when the stage comes in, we get the stage up, and then we got to put the chairs out, and the sound company comes in to put all the sound equipment on the stage, and do a sound check on that Friday, and get ready for Saturday morning. And then,
Friday, I can't believe that going in there's. For the beginning of the festival, seeing all of the vendors, all of the stage setup, but I would have thought that would take a longer time. That is fantastic,
and
amazing.
Then, yeah, and then Saturday we're down there again at 4 o'clock in the morning, just double checking things, getting ready.
So you don't sleep.
Tuesday. But it's a lot of hard work. But my reward. I mean, yes, I do this for a business, but my reward is to look out and seeing thousands of people forgetting life for a few hours and enjoying, live music and blues and having the time of their life, and then looking at the bands on the stage having as much fun as the fans are, and when that combination works, it's magic.
Yeah.
And I always like to surprise everybody on after the last act on Saturday and Sunday by putting a little jam up there, and we've had some phenomenal, phenomenal jams that just you're never going to see that many people play again together. And, so it's that's my reward. And, of course, the bands love coming to Maine because of the audience. And, it's a tribute to the city of Rockland, supporting what I do, and then the fans supporting what my artists that come in do. So it takes a team. And, when we were talking before we started, my wife Jean is a major part of this. She handles all the volunteers. I design the T-shirts, but she orders all them stuff. And a lot of my family, when you come in the gates, it's my children, family that are at the gates. My daughters are in the T-shirt booths. And, it takes a lot of work besides. I get a lot of the credit because I'm the face of the festival,
sure.
Which is fine, but I could not do it without our volunteers, and my family is important that makes it work. So it takes a lot of the headaches away from me. Once the show starts, I've got you're on stage now, and where's my next band? I got it, and I get the bands. As you know, you've been there, I run a very tight schedule. I run it on time.
Yep.
And I think it's important because I've done that for two reasons. You as a band, you're going to go on at 1 o'clock. You get backstage at 12 o'clock. You're ready. You're pumped up. You're ready to go. You get there at 12 o'clock, and I tell you, we're running an hour behind.
Yeah.
You lose all that momentum you just had to get ready, so you got to relax and then get build back up. But you as a fan who bought a ticket to see Eddie Shaw, for instance, we're just using that name, and you come there, and you only can come see Eddie, and that's your favorite, and you get there. He's supposed to be on at 1 o'clock. You get there at 1:45 because you got to leave at 2 to go someplace else, and we're an hour behind. And you paid a ticket to come see that band, and you don't get to see him. You're probably never coming back. And so it's important to me to going back to the kids at the blues camp, I let them know the same thing. You're on the stage at this time, you're off at this time, and you're going to have to learn how to do that. But
lesson to learn.
So it's important, and I have a lot of fans that will come up to me and say, we come to your festivals because we follow you in Maine, Massachusetts, and Florida because we're going to see great blues artists that we haven't seen, but you have, but you run on time. We know when we're going to see someone at a certain time, they're going to be on that time. So it's an important thing. Johnny Sanzone presented me at the Blues Music Awards in Memphis. He walked up to me. He says, I have something for you. And he gave me an engraved pocket watch that says Blues on Time. He said, I've been playing festivals all over the world. He says, you run the best festival out there and on time. So he gave me
a stopwatch or something.
Yeah, he gave me a pocket watch. It says Blues on Time. So I love, as you can tell by my talking, I love what I do. Yes. It's a lot of hard work, but I love what I do, and it's rewarding on both ends.
Yep. And from a fan standpoint, I've heard that, and I know that, and I see that the way you run it, and it is enjoyable to see. Some of the bands, I think, want to go on a little bit, but they also know why they're getting off now, why there's another band, and the whole thing that you impress them with, and it's just fun to see it and fun to see the way you run it. Are you bringing your book?
The book will be there every year. So, I've got, I think I'm down to less than 100 books left. I had 1,100 of them, and there's 100 books left, and they'll be there with the DVD, and that book was the first 25 years of it. So that book is actually, 7 years old now, which is hard to believe.
Well, that was my next question. And Heart of Blues, 25 years of North Atlantic Blues Festival, and the DVD. When's the next one?
I haven't thought of that yet. I had no idea I was going to do the first one. I mean, it was a lady up the street that happened to be visiting my wife and I, and we were talking about the festival, and she says, and she's an author, she goes, you ought to do a book. And this was like 2 to 2.5 months before the festival. She says, you ought to do a book for 25 years. I said, I'm trying to do something special for 25 years. She goes, write a book. I said, never. How do I write a book? And I said, she goes, what do you have? I said, well, I have all the T-shirts. I have all the posters. We have the pins from when we decided to do the pins. I said, I do have photographs from every year. She goes, well, you got everything you need to start with. So put that together. So I dug out all that stuff. And then I put it together, and then I wrote a little paragraph on each year, something that was funny that happened, or something about the festival, and then I still felt it was something missing, so I decided, I just got on the phone, and I called, 50 different artists and said, can you give me a quote for the book? I'm writing a book, can you give me a quote? And so I got the artists to give a quote, what they endured, or something about the festival, and that's how we put it together, and I was really pleased at how it came out, and then we did the DVD the following year because we did the first 25 years, and so we used some of that. And the DVD is actually 3-disc, and it's kind of the history of the festival, and it's almost 4 hours long, but it's 80% music and 20% interviews. And
I've watched it. Great DVD.
It was fun putting that together. I mean, it brings up a lot of memories, and speaking of the book, when I did the book, it was heartwarming and sorrow because when I started going from each year to each year, and I started realizing all the people who had passed.
Who's gone. Yep.
And that was only the people who we had name-wise. How many side guys that I didn't know who they were had also passed. And So it was rewarding and, like I say, and humbling because, wow, we've lost so many great artists. And then on the other hand, I said, gee, I had the honor and privilege of working with them and meeting them. And, you know, and so many of them had been to my home, you know, that when they're coming up, especially for the Monday night blues series that we've been doing for years, they might come in on Sunday or stay over on Tuesday. So I say, hey, why don't you come up to the house for a home-cooked meal and hang out? And having some of those people at the house just sitting there just shooting the breeze for 3 or 4 hours and they're letting their hair down, you know, it's that we're not, you know, it's not, you know, promoter and talent buyer and versus band, it's friendship. You know, we're sitting there having a meal and just talking and you know, that is so rewarding because it's just been so much fun. And then when I go out to, you know, different places, you know, when I did a festival for the Robert Johnson's family, for Claude Johnson, Robert's son, you know, when they'd been one in Hazelhurst, Mississippi, as I flew out into Jackson, Mississippi, Bobby Rush picked me up at the airport. You know, and he says, hang out with me for a day, and then, you know, and you can go over to Hazelhurst tomorrow. You know, and you get things like that. You know, Eddie Shaw picked me up when I flew into Chicago. I mean, it's kind of cool when you can have these people you know, it's a two-way street, and they appreciate what I do in my part. I appreciate what they do, and we've, you know, formed some great, great relationships. I probably speak with Bobby Rush twice a month, year-round, we talk. Mm. I mean, it just shoot the breeze, and, you know, and a lot of artists I speak with a lot on the phone, you know, a lot will ask for advice and stuff, but it's rewarding because it's, you know, it's friendships that were gained. And, you know, when people get into this business, you know, they ask me, you know, how did you start? Why you do this? And I let them know that their credibility, your first time meeting and your first impressions with that person you're dealing with, they don't forget. Mm. And so be upfront, be honest, and be yourself, and you're going to have a whole lot more to go forward with than if you try to, you know, give them a little bull and not be yourself, and you know, they can see that, and you know, and it's they're no different than you and I are, and they just happen to play better, a whole lot more music than we can ever play. I mean, you know, and
kazoo. That's all I do is kazoo.
I mean, I have a collection in my music room in my house with, you know, guitars and stuff. I actually have one of Eddie Shaw's saxophones that before he passed. Wow. You know, and I had the honor of inducting Eddie into the Blues Hall of Fame, and I also spoke, you know, at his funeral when he passed, and. You know, so, you know, he gave me one of his horns, and, you know, but I've got a, you know, baby Lucille. I've got, you know, I got a little Milton guitar. You know, I got some harmonicas from different artists that played. And so, and when bands come to my house, they go in my music room and they sit there and they, you know, I got a drum kit in there with, a couple of amps, and they just sit there and they'll, you know, there's like 15 different guitars that were given to me. Can I play those? I said, hey, they're up there. I don't play them, so go ahead. So, you know, that's a lot of fun.
You make me jealous. And talking about artists who are gone, just doing a radio show, I'm talk about that, and you miss them, but Eddie and all those folks left their legacy. They gave us music, and we can still hear it. And it's, to me, that gives me chills sometimes when I play an artist and I know they're gone, but they're still here.
Well, that's why you're playing them. You for what you do, you know, you get a chance to hear this music and pick the songs that you want to play that you like.
Yep.
And so you're keeping it on your end, going, you know, that music alive and their legacy alive. And of course, you love to hear the new stuff, but you still, you know, don't forget where it came from.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
You know, yep. and you know, we're at that age where, you know, we grew up on Muddy, Wolf, Coco Taylor, you know, and people like that, and the Buddy guys who have, you know, fortunately still around.
Yeah.
But, you know, with these new artists coming up, I speak on a lot of panels, and they'll talk about what's the difference between today's blues and, you know, years ago. I said, well, if Muddy Waters was 18 years old today, he would sound a whole lot different than the Muddy Waters when he was 18 years old growing up. I said, you know, times have changed, and the purists have to let that go and accept the new blues that's out there, because it's just as exciting as it was when the blues were playing 50 years ago. It's different. Yes, it's different. I mean, but it's, you know, it's still thriving and moving forward. And some of these new young artists, absolutely amazing. I mean, you know, Kingfish. You know, he's won a Grammy now. You know, I mean, you know.
So good.
And, you know, when I brought him to the festival 4 or 5 years ago, whenever it was, you know, I can't afford him anymore. I mean, good for him. But, yeah. I mean, and he's a great kid. And, I've seen him when I'm down to Clarksdale. And if he's around, we'll catch up. And, he's down to earth. But, I mean, it's good for him. I mean, Shamika Copeland, I booked her at 17 years old. You know, she played on that Sunday morning at one of those new artists that was coming up. So that part is just rewarding that I do search for, you know, and like you say, you know, Harold Davenport's gonna set the tempo on Saturday. And Gemini Drag is gonna set the tempo on Sunday, and which is gonna make everybody work hard.
Awesome. And moving ahead with the blues, talking about the old blues at Muddy and Howlin' and all them, and having it now, the tagline I sometimes use on my shows is, I'm not keeping the blues alive. It's alive. It's kicking. There are some great, great young artists out there, and getting some of these young folks like anybody to come on and just smoke that blues. It just sounds so good. Makes me feel good.
Well, I talked with these young blues artists. I said, you know, DK Harrell, a great example. When I first saw DK at the Blues Music Awards, at the International Blues Challenge, and I talked to him, and he had B.B. King down to a science. If you close your eyes, you would swear it was a young B.B. King on the stage.
Yes.
And I said, I really enjoyed your set with B.B., you know, how you have B.B. King down. I said, but now don't forget who DK Harrell is.
Yes.
You know, and I just said, I want to hear a little bit more DK Harrell. It's great that you're paying, you know, your tribute to BB, but don't forget DK Harrell, because you got a lot to give. And so when I saw him in his next show, he come up to me and says, what you think of that? And they take what you give them for advice, and those new young artists, none of them seem to have a chip on their shoulder, you know, which is really cool. I mean, you know, they're out there like, just watch me, you know. No, they still want to learn and get better, and they want to be that next. You know, we grew up with, like I said earlier, Buddy Guys, the Howlin' Wolf, the Eddie Shaws as our heroes, that Albert Collins, and, you know, was my favorite band, you know, ever, you know. But I'll talk to Kenny Neal, Ronnie Baker Brooks, and people like that, and say, you know, you're that generation that these young kids are looking up to now, because, you know, you grew up looking at your dads, you know, but these young kids are looking now at that group of people, you know, Billy Branches and them people are that pair where they're the ones that the young kids are growing up on. I said to these young kids, 25 years and 30 years from now, you're going to be that group that the next generation is going to be looking up to. So it keeps evolving, and there's always going to be some great talent. And like you said, it's not keeping the blues alive. The blues is alive and well, and it's in great hands, and I'm real happy where the blues is.
I'm thinking about, when you said that, I thought about the North Atlantic Blues Festival, and one of the artists said, I listened to you play, and I actually wrote a couple of songs in minor key, which I've never done, because you did that, and it was Tommy Castro talking to Tinsley Ellis. And I'm thinking, they're all like that. All of these blues artists, it just seems like they're good folks, and they're willing to listen and learn. Paul, I can't thank you enough for being here. Boy, this has been a lot of fun, and like I said, I'm kind of jealous, but I'll get over it.
And nothing to be jealous about. You know, what you're doing is just as important to what I do.
Well, yeah, but see, you give them gigs and they can get money and merch and do all that stuff and sell CDs. When bands thank me, I tell them, yeah, I said, but there's other folks out there who are getting you there, so you can afford to keep doing what you're doing, and I can keep playing it.
But it takes all of us, you know. I mean, it takes that little club, that little that the radio DJ. It takes that little store that sells music. You know, so we all kind of work together in our own ways, and we might not know each other, but every one of us have a little piece of that pie that make that pie full. So people, the fans, and the fans are the most important, because without the fans, you could have the best artists in the world, but if they're playing to nobody, they're not going to be out there playing. So, you know, the fans, so by you playing your music, the blues that you play to the fans, that brings those fans out to some of the clubs and the festivals that they hear. And so,
That's my goal.
It takes all of us. I mean, that's my goal as well, is that, you know, keep the artists a place to play, and, you know, and keep venues open. And that's why I've created new festivals and try to help other festivals, because it's important for these people to continue to give that music.
Plus, whenever I do a show, I just got it cranked up. I just love this stuff. Hey, thanks for being here, Paul. And just a reminder to everybody, go online, go to the North Atlantic Blues Festival, and check it out. The lineup is online, NorthAtlanticBluesFestival.com. And Paul Benjamin's going to be there leading the show again. So, Paul, thanks for bringing the blues to Maine and for hosting one of the best blues festivals on the planet, according to a lot of people and me, the North Atlantic Blues Festival.
Thank you, and I kind of agree with you, but I'm a little biased.
Have a good one.